Good morning, Professor.
Morning, James.
Thank you so much for having us on the show. Having you on the show today would be the right way to phrase that. When we communicate face-to-face, there is an expectation of mutual attentiveness, but these norms could actually be constructed if we were to have the majority of our conversations with non-humans. With our attention span, which is actually estimated to have decreased from 12 seconds to just 8, what can we expect from the quality of conversation in the future?
Yeah, well, there are all sorts of changes, I guess, taking place in conversation already as a result of the emergence of AI. And I think one of the things that I was trying to draw attention to this in my new book, The Culture of AI, is a lot of it's invisible. You know, we don't really notice it because the way AI is often presented in a lot of media, you know, it's to do with self-driving cars and it's to do with space robots. And often it's sort of, you know, seen as being a set of changes that are projected into the future. But as you mentioned in your introduction, AI is the changes of AI are with us in the here and now. And in terms of how we're talking to each other, you know, developments like Amazon's Alexa and Google's Home, these are the changes that are taking place in everyday talk. So, you know, I think it's quite right to say that mutual attentiveness, when we talk to other people, most of us, most of the time, we are listening. We pay attention to what people are saying. But when we increasingly talk to, for example, you know, Google Home, we just start to often issue commands, you know, do this, order me a pizza, buy me a ticket, do this, do that. So I think how this is going to impact on human conversation, it's a really important point, and it's one that hasn't so far impacted the public debate very much.
Yeah, right. Because I guess the public debate is more focused around what can be seen physically rather than what goes on invisibly, which is really our conversations, which don't really get as much public, let's say, airtime as it should do. And unlike face-to-face talk, chatbots don't really require us to put any effort into making the conversation, I guess, polite or interesting. We don't need to be charming, amusing, or assert our intelligence. Would this mean that dual personalities will form, say, a new persona for digital life as well?
Yeah, I think so, because the changes that are happening are really very, very quick. I mean, a lot of AI devices, if you think about it, they like talking to something like Siri on an Apple phone. That's speech that's really crafted speech that draws from an enormous database of code, of scripted utterances, of previous network conversations. And it's why when we often talk to these devices, you know, if you say to them something like, what's the capital of France, you know, well, Paris is the capital of France, or any pop culture trivia or jokes and things like that, when there's the right answer to a question that's independent of the speaker, that's when these devices can be very, very good. But if you actually ask a question like, well, you know, I'm in Sydney today, what's a good thing to do? What you tend to get then is this kind of pastiche of thousands of people that have talked or offered comments on thousands of different events or places or things to do. So, you know, at the moment, that's where a lot of AI is, but it's also shifting because these devices are becoming increasingly intelligent. So that's sort of changing the nature of the conversations that people can now have with intelligent machines and are increasingly having with intelligent machines, especially in terms of customer relations. When we, you know, phone through and we get chatbots there when we think we might be talking to a flesh and blood person.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess a big component of human-to-human communication is through the reading of body language as well. How will AI be able to compensate for that where questions aren't simple answers and they might have a bit of, I guess, emotion or something else kind of attached with it?
Yeah, well, at this point, obviously, and you're absolutely right, we do not just read off in our everyday conversations the nature of a person's mood or sentiment from their body language, but that those signals are increasingly important to the way in which we respond and try and read off another person's emotions. And at the moment, that's not there with AI. But the attempt to try to build in and to mimic human emotion into intelligent machines is definitely on the rise. There's a delightfully named AI called Wobot, which is basically a therapy bot. And it was launched last year in the United States. I think in its first week of use, it, you know, something like 50,000 people spoke to this therapy bot, with many of them feeling that it was much better to be able to talk to this chatbot than to actually go and see a psychologist, with, you know, people offering comments like, well, it actually felt like a real person. And I think it's the emphasis on the word like there is very important, because obviously whilst a number of people feel comfortable talking to psychologists and therapists, many others can feel quite intimidated at times. So there's no doubt that the arrival of intelligent machines, the age of AI, is opening up these kind of opportunities for people in ways previously unimaginable.
Yeah, absolutely. I was actually going to bring up Wobot in my next question, because I guess it kind of is something that mimics empathy and those kind of different emotions. Would having a, a bot that I guess mimics those kind of things in our conversations, as we already know, will we actually lose our own kind of feeling of empathy in conversations as we talk to other humans?
So I think that's one of the big worries. You know, there's a lot of the major public debate. I mean, the AI debate at the moment's fallen into two categories. In the sort of media, there's been a debate, obviously, about robots taking our jobs, and you can understand why people are very worried about that. The other big debate has been about AI and ethics. But this invisible part of the way in which AI is changing everyday life, I think, is actually, you know, equally relevant and serious. Because if you think about it at the moment, when people go to work, for instance, this morning on Monday morning, people go into work. When we talk to a colleague and we're trying to get something done, we don't just say straight out, you know, do this or have you done that. I mean, some people do, but you tend to be limited as to how well you do in your job. We begin with questions like, you know, did you have a nice weekend? Now, if we're moving into a world where we're increasingly talking to intelligent machines, where we can say, order the ticket, you know, buy the movie pass, do this and do that, as we switch between talking to intelligent machines and talking to fellow workers, our co-workers, there's bound to be spillover. And one of the things where my research team's interested in here is trying to understand how that's impacting on people's lives and what follow through that will have for jobs, employment, and unemployment.
Yeah, it's definitely extremely interesting. And I guess just as a final question, you might be familiar with Yuval Noah Harari, who is the author of Sapiens and 21 Lessons for the 21st Century. He is he's well known for saying that we have three big problems facing humanity, which is climate change, nuclear war, and then the rise of AI. Do you think that, I guess, public conversations aren't including this rise of AI enough, that people aren't, I guess, getting our heads around even the small stuff that we're talking about here, the invisible stuff, rather than the kind of sci-fi things that people just imagine?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, this is not to say that the cataclysmic dangers of AI, that is, you know, when the late Stephen Hawking said that AI's, you know, possibly represents the end of humanity, it's at that level of an existential threat. I mean, yes, the autonomization of military drones and weapons clearly creates the possibility of that kind of cataclysmic danger. But I guess the point of a lot of my research, I'm trying to highlight from how I've looked at the impacts of AI on people and organizations, is there are lots of other things, risks that we need to be worried about. And these are risks in terms of how we communicate with other people, how we talk with others, how we treat others, and ultimately the kind of, I guess, internal conversations we're also having with ourselves, how we think about our own lives, both the possibilities and the risks.
Yeah, it's extremely interesting conversation to have, that's for sure. So thank you so much for bringing your expert knowledge to this little community radio station. So the people in Sydney can absolutely try and wrap their heads around what's in store in the future and probably are able to relate to their already, I guess, daily changing experiences with AI and probably their interactions with the internet and all different things like that. So yeah, thank you so much, Professor, for coming on the show today.
It's been a pleasure, James. Thank you.